Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
That was Cubs pitching coach Jim Hickey on earlier, as he was with Mulligan Haugh in his regular slot. Mm-hmm. And some other things he gave us there, the fact that Brandon Morrow would be scheduled for a sim game and then a very quick turnaround to be back on the field and closing games for the Cubs.
Yeah, it goes along with something Theo told us last time we had him on, that there was kind of this understood amount of Brandon Morrow that the Cubs would likely be able to get back, and just measuring where that amount gets applied was kind of the big issue for the Cubs, the thing you had to figure out when to hit the gas pedal on.
And there was going to be a full season of rest required for him to return to 100%. But it was, you get what you can get out of him when you need to get it. And as long as you can have him through the playoffs at some semblance of his ability, that's what you're going to want. We're told Theo's running 5 minutes late and will be calling in shortly. My guess is that he's busy on the phone with MLB wonks trying to get Thursday figured out.
You would figure that that's probably the task at hand. We'll ask him about it. We'll figure out exactly what's going on with the Cubs and Nationals on Thursday, or figure it out best we can. With the Morrow stuff, though, If you know, as an organization, if the understanding is, as long as things go well, we've got X amount of Brandon Morrow to use, right? And that'll be 100% of Brandon Morrow, wherever it's going to be. And we only have 88 pitches, 105 pitches, 200, whatever it is. You know you've got this set amount that you've got to apply pretty conservatively over the next month or so. That's the theory for the Cubs anyway.
It still changes the way Joe Maddon wants to do things from the back.
It certainly does.
If you're building your bullpen strategy from him on forward into the game, it's tough to not know.
It also changes the urgency with which Carl Edwards needs to get himself figured out. He's talking last night, I believe it was last night, about a mental block, a writer's block that's kind of come on him. Paul Sullivan had a pretty funny thing in the Trib talking to CJ Edwards about the writer's block that was there, and Edwards left before Sullivan told him the cure for writer's block, which of course is just drinking a massive amount of alcohol. That's what it's been for a lot of famous authors in the past. I don't know that works for pitching mechanics.
No, not everybody's Faulkner.
No, they're not.
Because that would be bad, especially if people are driving.
And Faulkner couldn't pitch, had a terrible curveball. But with Edwards and the rest of that bullpen, you can't let this idea of Morrow, this fleet in being of Brandon Morrow, affect the way you're managing the rest of the game. And that's got to be a very difficult thing to do, knowing that you've got this guy here that we can press go on, but it'll be too early, and then you've got to give him. That's a complicated thing to have to balance.
And that's if Hickey's right. That's even assuming that what he's saying is true and not just wildly optimistic. He could have a sim game and feel awful and be done for the year. Right?
Oh, of course. Yeah, the setback is absolutely a possibility. It's something that you've got to guard against as best you can. Problem is, there's no guarding against it.
This segment is brought to you by the Chicago Blackhawks. Chicago Blackhawks hit the ice at the United Center this fall with an exciting original six matchup as they take on the Toronto Maple Leafs on Sunday, October 7th. Visit ChicagoBlackhawks.com to purchase tickets for Blackhawks home games today.
Something I was thinking about, too, after that game, Len pointed this out. Len Casper pointed this out on Twitter, too. Jose Quintana's numbers against the Brewers are terrific. Save, one pretty bad start three turns ago, I think, something like that. Maybe five turns ago, had that blow up against the Brewers. The difference between Jose Quintana landing with the Cubs and landing with the Brewers, I think some of the lens, I was asking earlier in the show, why is it that Cubs fans seem to, or a good vocal portion of Cubs fans seem to take Jose Quintana's bad starts and use those to forget about the good ones, like last night. And I think some of it, and a texter brought this up, some of that might have to do with what got paid for Jose Quintana, the Eloy Jimenez thing. And I mean, it was a big trade, right? And you can kind of see, at least in the minor leagues, the things you gave up, what you could have had with some offensive struggles that you've had this season. Maybe you're a franchise that can have Eloy Jimenez come up and ready to roll. I just wonder, though, remember, baked into that cost for Jose Quintana, it's opportunity cost for other teams who didn't get him. What if the Brewers snag him instead of the Cubs? Where are you looking now for the rest of your rotation help?
Here's the numbers. His last five starts, and I thank Chris Komka, as always, for NBC
Sports
Chicago.
Oh, really? Chris Komka put together some great stats.
Last five starts overall, Jose Quintana, a 1.84 earned run average in 29 and a third innings, 21 hits, 10 walks, 25 strikeouts, no homers. That's a whip of 1.057. In 10 career starts against Milwaukee, he's got a 1.60 ERA in 67 and a third innings. So think about the average there.
Yeah.
40 hits, 15 walks, 63 strikeouts, 5 home runs. That is a walks plus hits per innings pitched, or whip, of 0.817. And that's remarkable.
And he kind of keeps some of those big lefty boppers that they have sit down, you know? I mean, neutralized some. You saw Joe follow up with another left. I mean, what he allows you, particularly against that lineup as it's constructed now, allows you to, you know, play a little bit in that bullpen, which is something Joe needs to be able to do at this point.
And they have some inherently scary guys who are just standing in the box. You know, Braun is always scary to a Cub fan. And,
yes.
And Aguilar,
my word,
Aguilar looks menacing unless he's trying to field. I don't know if it's him or Abreu, or, you know, Matt Adams. I'm just trying to think of the list of first baseman, the guys who are kind of difficult to watch out there.
Fats don't believe in the field.
Okay. I know it's a personal philosophy. You're sort of living by a code. You're put off by the entire idea of fielding.
If it requires moving and not at a trot,
okay.
And especially laterally, we're out.
Is Aguilar fat?
That's an interesting question. He goes 6'3", 250.
He's way more than 250.
Yeah, I think looks that's more than generous. He looks bigger than 6'3", too. When he got punched out on the strike three call, which was a good pitch, but it, you know, could have. Mm-hmm. He probably had an argument for it, or at least has seen that pitch called a ball before. He looked way bigger than 6'3", and 250. That was a menacing human being.
Yeah. I'm sure he looked that bigger than that to the umpire.
Looking through his standard fielding numbers are
not great, Bob.
Not good.
Yeah.
Not good. His fielding percentage is .995, which, if anything, is why you shouldn't believe in fielding percentage alone.
I'd like to see defensive runs in the WAR component. If you look at defensive runs above or below average, and for a first baseman, it's hard to cost your team a lot of runs at first base. And look at Abreu this year.
There are coaches who would argue that, and I've listened as best I can to those coaches who would really fight that idea. The fact that a first baseman can't, you know, can you cost runs? And you think a lot about the balls hit to you. There are other situations where a first baseman helps out, but that's not why Theo's calling.
Theo Epstein, the Cubs president of baseball operations, joins the Bernstein and McKnight show. Hello, Theo. How are you?
Hey, morning, guys.
Oh, a little sigh of relief from the expectedly veteran dominant performance by Jose Quintana last night. Just like last year, it's a big night for him to come through, is it not?
Yeah, that was a huge performance for us. And I think he turned a corner, you know, about 3-4 starts ago with a really small mechanical adjustment, just to help him stay over the rubber and get online a little bit more. And you see his fastball's ticked up a mile or two per hour, and he's got much better finish on his heater, and that's really everything. I mean, the guy battled all year without his best fastball, and now that he's had it, he can be himself, and really picked us up last night in the last 3 or 4 starts, honestly. It was an outstanding performance when we needed it the most.
Theo, we were talking about this in the pre-show meeting. I'm looking at the Brooks baseball stuff. The fastball's up. The change is up. The curve is up in velocity. His delivery itself seems so simple. So how minute is this mechanical change to find that kind of return? It's mind-boggling if you're not in the game like you are, I'd imagine, to see that kind of small change meet those kind of results.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, the smallest thing. It doesn't always have to be about, you know, the arm action or the takeaway or anything with your upper half. Sometimes it can be something as small as a real slight adjustment with the lower half or foot placement. And, you know, it's the kinetic chain, it's all connected. So what you do early in your delivery can affect where your arm is upon release. And he does have a simple, repeatable delivery. It's one of the things that's made him so good and so consistent, but it doesn't mean that you're going to have it locked in all the time. And sometimes it takes just a little bit of a feel with an adjustment to get back in sequence. And it's all about his heater and the finish on it. It sets everything else up. And now that he has that back, we're really, really confident in him.
Scoring runs of late in run scoring situations has really not been easy for the Cubs. And generally, when I look at performance with runners in scoring position, it all seems like statistical noise that hitters are who they are, and given enough time and enough situations, that's just the case. However, it's been 2 years now that the Cubs have underperformed relative to who they are when it comes to runners in scoring position, whether it's Chris Bryant or Wilson Contreras. You know, it's a thing that's occurring again this year. Does that merit attention? Is there reason to think there's something causal, or is that just a blip?
No, it definitely merits attention, because it's not just pure, randomness and sample. I mean, over time, these things do regress, and your performance situationally will start to mirror your overall performance. But there's more to it than that, and it's really approach-based, especially when you look at team-wide trends and strikeout rates, walk rates, hard hit rates, ground ball rates in those situations. We haven't really locked in a great approach consistently. We've had our stretches, and that's when we've played our best baseball, honestly, is when we're making hot contact and good contact, using the whole field in those situations. Our power is dramatically down with runners on base and runners in scoring position. So that's really been the story beyond just the runners in scoring position. The second half of the year, or especially, August 1st on, we just haven't driven the ball with any consistency throughout the lineup. And if you think back to the trade deadline, we had more bats than we had spots in the lineup, and we were solely focused on pitching, because we really didn't have anywhere to play anybody. And then right away, our offense really kind of stumbled in August. We went out and got Daniel Murphy to try to right the ship, and we did. And but we just haven't really clicked yet, August and September offensively. I'd like to think that means it's around the corner, because we're just too talented to stay like this and not drive the ball. But we're having to try to find ways to win without driving the baseball, and that's tough to do.
So is that something you don't fight? Because fans are going to say, as things get close and late, play a little more small ball, take some risks, send Ben Zobrist on an 0-2 count with Javi Baez up there knowing you're going to get a breaking ball, that kind of stuff. Is that something that you and Jed and Joe work together to come up with creative solutions, or is that something that's too much of a, I don't know, break glass in case of emergency and sounding a panic alarm this late in the season?
No, I mean, you have to be realistic. I mean, everything's on the table, when you get down to 3 weeks left in the season and this tighter race, you do everything you can to win the game. That's what I said. It doesn't matter if you've been in a slump. It doesn't matter if, you're not feeling great. It's sort of all hands on deck to win these ball games. And that includes, Joe and trying to, create optimal strategies with who we are right now and what we are right now. And the best solution is just to get guys going and clicking offensively. And I think it will happen. Typically the way these things work is two or three guys get hot and you ride those guys to some big innings and score a bunch of runs. But until that happens, of course you, given the personnel and given the game situation, you get a little bit more aggressive to try to score, even just one run, especially with how good our starting pitching's been lately.
Jim Hickey on the Scores Morning Show today said that Brandon Morrow is looking ready for a sim game and then could return to the active roster shortly thereafter. Is that as you understand it?
Yeah, he's going to have one more pen session and then a sim game, and then conceivably sometime next week could be available to us. And, we have to be prepared for a broad range of outcomes with him. We may not necessarily see, his top shelf stuff. We may, but we may not. But I think he throws so hard that even him not quite locked in and not quite at his best could still help us. And he's really eager to get back and contribute, and give him a ton of credit for battling through this stuff. And I think there's a decent chance that he's going to help us. And you know, it just, if he can work his way back towards the end of the game, we'll see if that happens or not. But it just creates so many more weapons for us and gives Joe a chance to be more aggressive with other guys and with Stropey coming in certain spots earlier in the game. So Brandon would certainly be welcome back.
So it sounds like he's not immediately returning to closer regardless.
Well, Joe's already said that, that he's, you know, it would be foolish to his first game back throw him into a closing situation. That we'd obviously look for a lower leverage spot just to let him get out there and test it, because there's no minor league season left, so he can't throw a rehab game. So you want to, if possible, give him that first opportunity. We can go out and get himself comfortable in a situation where the game's not on the line.
What about Hayward?
Yeah, he said he was feeling good yesterday, making some progress. So he's in a running progression and throwing and hitting. So I don't know. I don't want to put a timetable on it, but you know, hopefully, you know, sometime next week we'll have a chance to see him on the field. It'd be nice.
With Morrow, then, just so I want to make sure I'm thinking about him the right way, I guess. And obviously, things can change with a pen and a sim game and see how he feels, but. Will he essentially or kind of be a gas tank that you guys might not be able to refill once you start using it?
I don't know what you mean by that.
That once you start, you know, using him, days off during the season or during a playoff run might not necessarily have him bounce back the way a healthy pitcher would, or he would when he's healthy.
I don't know that we know that yet.
Okay.
I don't think we would back-to-back him immediately, or maybe not at all during the regular season. But, the first step is getting him back and seeing how he feels and how he throws and how much he can help us and then how available he is. So we're not getting ahead of ourselves. But, I don't look at it that way. Again, I said there's a broad range of outcomes from him just not feeling good enough to get back and pitch effectively in game situations, to him being his normal self, to somewhere in between, and we'll just kind of assess it as we go. But he feels good right now.
Theo, how can Major League Baseball reasonably ask you to put employees of the Cubs, your entire traveling party, on an airplane and send them toward a massive generational hurricane? Just that simply, how can reasonable people think that this is the right thing to do?
Well, we've certainly been making that argument strongly. I think the counter argument is that the storm has veered a little bit south and that DC may not be dramatically affected tomorrow, and more time is required to see exactly what the forecast is before we make that decision. But I cannot imagine that Major League Baseball would send us into a situation. I know they would not send us into a situation where there's any danger or risk, hard stop. And then I cannot imagine that they send us into a situation where there's a chance of rain. You know, given what we experienced in Washington last weekend, and given the fact that that would create a situation of 30 straight days with a game scheduled in the middle of a pennant race, which is just about unprecedented. So, you know, to repeat, you know, they will not send us into a situation where there's any danger, and I cannot imagine they'd send us into a situation where there's rain. We'll see what happens.
Would you ever get to a point where you would simply say, listen, we are not going, and if you want to the extent that you want to punish us or forfeit a game, I mean, could you say it is in the best interest of the health and welfare of our players, of our entire traveling party, that we're simply not going? Figure out what you want to do.
Well, it's premature to say that. I think the first step is wait and see what the decision is, and we're all counting on common sense to rule the day. If we get into that position, there will certainly be a conversation with our players to talk about what the right thing to do is. And, Major League Baseball won't send our players into a situation that's dangerous, and we certainly wouldn't either. So absolutely there'll be a conversation with our players before we determine what to do. But right now we're in a wait and see mode, just hoping for a common sense solution.
Do you know when we'll know for sure?
No.
Joe mentioned the other day that he'd just as soon play the 163 after the season is over. We talked with Crane Kenny the other day as well, and he mentioned the idea of a neutral site game, like the clock is kind of running out on that. Are those kind of the senses that you have too, rather play 163 and the options for a neutral site just kind of aren't there?
Our position is that the game should be played the day after the season, just because of the burden of 30 consecutive days with a game scheduled, and you know, and the risk of flying in for a one-off where there's the possibility of a rain delay given what we just went through in D.C. But that's not the rule, and that's not the way it's being enforced right now. So now we're just in discussions with Major League Baseball awaiting their decision about the forecast and trying to make our case that it's unreasonable to ask this group of players to go 30 straight days with a game scheduled and possibly fly back to Washington to sit in a rain delay once again, given night game tonight and day game on Friday.
Something I've been meaning to ask you, we've had an ongoing conversation on this show regarding pitching and Major League Baseball and how to plan for all of the vicissitudes of pitching and what happens to arms. The idea that the experience that you've gone through this year with Darvish and with Chatwood and with Morrow, and then we saw what happened on the south side with Michael Kopech and all the fanfare, and then, of course, he needs Tommy John surgery. I mean, meaning to ask you, if you were doing it all over again, not necessarily the Cubs, but right now you are put in charge of Team X, full rebuild, is it still your belief that the right way to do it is to use draft capital and early resources more for position players and still to buy pitching when you need it? Does that still hold?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you build and plan around position players because there's more certainty. And the best thing you can do with pitching is make no long-term plans, because there's no such thing as long-term plans with pitching. So if you can, sometimes you get put in a situation where you have to, but if you can avoid making any long-term plans, it can pay off in the long run. So we decided to build a core of position players that we could win with for the 7 years they're going to be up here at a minimum, and then address the pitching on a shorter-term basis year to year when you have a better idea of who's good and who's not and who's healthy and who's not. And you know, there we knew it would come with some risk year to year that we wouldn't figure it out perfectly every year, and we haven't. But, you know, look, this is the first year where we've really, had serious pitching issues. If you look from, I think we led all of baseball, or certainly the National League, we led in ERA from 2015 through 2017, addressing it year to year, or with shorter term plans, I guess is a better way to say it. And then even this year, with the troubles that we had with the offseason additions, we were able to make in-season adjustments with Hamels and with Chavez and figuring guys out. And our pitching projection, our pitching performance is a lot closer to our projection than our offensive performance, you know? So we've been able to figure the pitching out on the fly. So absolutely, I think the way to win, you know, over 162 and win championships and by getting in every year or just about every year is by building around more certainty. And that comes in the form of, you know, two-way position players with strong makeup.
So is it fair to say then with as many solutions, potentially long-term solutions as you do have in pitching with Darvish and Quintana and Lester and the potential of, you know, locking Hendricks up, I suppose, Hamels option, that you're going to look for more, you may be looking for more flexibility come the off season, or is that not, it's just too early to say, I guess.
I think every team, every year in the off season looks to add to his pitching staffs and looks for reinforcements, because guys who a year previous had been healthy are no longer healthy, or guys who had been consistent performers going into the year have had down years, and you're unsure about what you're projecting going forward. I think you're always looking to add, and you never have enough. And but I guess my point is, when you're making, you know, a first round pick and 2013 trying to win a World Series in 2016 or 2018 or 2020, I think you have a little bit better feel what you're getting with a position player than with a pitcher. It doesn't mean pitching is not important. It doesn't mean, you know, the Mets beat us with outstanding pitching, all healthy and all locked in at the same moment in time in the 2015 NLCS, and we tip our cap to that. And we took a lot of grief for that. And everyone said you have to build around young pitching, and we just kind of held our tongue and the point was that I think over time, we like the odds in our favor better with our approach. And, you know, we've been to three straight NLCSs, won a championship, and hopefully we get in for a fourth straight year. And I think it's, you know, just because it, in general, it's just harder to keep that pitching healthy and effective at the same time. And with the position player group, it's not like you're going to get perfect performance every year. You know, we've had a number of guys not perform up to expectations this year, but we're deep enough and we've been deep enough and healthy enough and talented enough to, you know, to at the moment have the best record in the National League and certainly play ourselves into a place of contention. So we like that approach. It doesn't mean it's right for everyone, but it's been good for us.
Theo, always good talking, and here's hoping the Thursday situation is resolved reasonably.
Yeah, here's to that. Thanks, guys.
That is Theo Epstein, the president of baseball operations of the Chicago Cubs, with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Bernstein and McKnight on Sports Radio 670 WSCR, The Score. And we were discussing during the break some of what Theo was telling us here, and I was just talking to a source also.
Mm-hmm.
And the latest information that we have, it's not just about the actual safety in a hurricane, the idea of people would be in danger or somehow imperiled. It's the logistical issue of either being rain delayed again,
yeah,
or travel delayed after the fact.
That's kind of the thing that I'd put out of mind, considering, you know, it's a hurricane bearing down on the east coast of the country. There's, if you just get rained out, then you're back in the same situation we're sitting in now, trying to tack on a game after the season is over. I know it wouldn't be 163, it'd be on the day you play it.
Or even if you get the game in and it's later, and with every hour that game goes later on Thursday, mm-hmm, you're giving the rain and wind more time to get there. At the moment, the National Weather Services are forecasting tropical storm force winds by 8 o'clock Thursday night. So even if you play the game, if you start saying, you know, you play it all out, by the time you get to the airport and the plane is all loaded up, the question is, can you fly home at that point, or are you grounded and then everything's screwed up completely differently?
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
So apparently baseball is going to wait as long as they possibly can to determine whether or not the Cubs are flying out after tonight. So nobody knows when we'll know.
No, it could be as late. It could be during a game. It could be during tonight's game that you figure out that you're getting on a flight, headed to Washington, and then going to play a 3 o'clock game there before you turn back. I think either way, whether you've got... I mean, if they're going to fly you to Washington, you have to get that game on Friday moved to a night game. If the city will let you, and that's what Crane Kenny told us the other day, yesterday, you've got to move this game on Friday to later in the evening just to stay alive. I mean, just to keep your guys somewhat, you know, awake. The ask here is big.
Yeah, and you wonder, like, well, why can't they just get up and go? They've got to, when you're telling a team they have to travel, what I think you got to realize that even if you tell the clubhouse staff in the middle of tonight's game, it's a fifth inning, and Rob Manfred calls and says, yeah, you're flying out after the game. I mean, just think about what has to happen there and all the way that they have to start packing everything up. They probably have it ready to go right now.
Oh, they're ready.
Regardless.
Yeah.
But then you're telling all your support staff and everybody else involved, you know, and Zach.
And you gotta, clearly Zach.
Yeah, you've got to get Zach ready to go.
I just thought of this too. You know, with all the, because it's a hurricane and the Washington, D.C. mayor has declared a state of emergency, I think we've been so focused on the weather. Let's just remember the actual baseball issues. This from the 847. What if there's extra innings?
Actually, added a modifier there, too, that you left out.
Oh, yes, he did. Yes, he absolutely did. I can't say that modifier here on air. What if there's extra innings tonight or tomorrow? I mean, think about the actual baseball things.
Right.
That could throw out your schedule and completely burn your travel routes. I mean, the logistics that you're asking everybody to move through here are pretty tough to make happen. And I understand that I'm sure baseball doesn't want to have to play 162, the last game of the season, on the game that everyone else, if there is a 163, is going to play the 163. but that's what you'd be looking at. You know, you do have one more off day, and it's next Thursday on the 20th.
Okay.
Cubs are in Arizona, and then coming back home to take three against the White Sox.
It's also the day of that big good sports gala that Crane Kenny was telling us about yesterday.
That's true. That's true. So people are wrapped up. And schedules are wrapped. How many hoops can you jump through in one regular season? Oh, never mind. The Nationals are playing the Mets. Done. It's got to go the last day of the year.
It doesn't work for them. Yeah.
No,
has to be off.
Play a doubleheader. No, they're at home. You just play a doubleheader. Morning game against the Cubs, night game against the Mets. You're all set, ready to roll.
He's Connor McKnight. I'm Dan Bernstein. I've got a baseball milestone that was achieved yesterday. Somebody who I believe is truly an unsung slugger of his era is very close to joining a list of historic names because of something that happened yesterday.
Let's see, Todd Helton's not playing anymore, so it must be someone else.
No, there's somebody who is one of the great sluggers of his era, and he, with one more season of a certain threshold, he's going to be standing shoulder to shoulder with some baseball gods.
We'll pull the veil back on that next. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
I got to let you and Joe have that one together.
Oh, that's just fantastic. It is. It's the first season of The Office. They're all going to play basketball. Michael picks Stanley first on his team. Stanley can't play, despite the fact that Michael really thought he could play. Jim, the guy who played John Krasinski, who's now in the new show that's being advertised. Literally, you can't turn on anything without his new show being advertised to you. And I feel like I probably have to watch it because being his advertised. He played hoops in high school and absolutely put somebody through the washer. It was great. It's good fun. Joe loves it.
So some baseball notes. First of all, we have this report from Glenn who says, at the game Monday night, good seats on the first base side. I can tell you Jesus Aguilar is fat.
Oh, good to know.
He said, I am fat. No, he's not. He said, I'm fat. I know how shirts fit on me because I am fat. And Jesus Aguilar's jersey fits him in exactly the way my shirts fit me.
Oh, it's the shirt fit thing. A little bit of a fall off from the gut. Is that what we're talking about here?
Yeah, fit a fat.
Okay.
The fit a fat workshop. It's like Build-A-Bear, but you fit a fat. Now, this man hit a home run last night. It gave him 30 home runs on the season. It means he now has 30 home runs for 7 consecutive seasons. That's a lot of consecutive seasons for Edwin Encarnacion.
Oh, he of the Parrot celebration.
Correct. The Parrot has made that many trips around. Every year, the Parrot gets to ride on his shoulder, the theoretical Parrot he has on his shoulder that rides around as he makes his home run trot. 7 consecutive years of 30 home runs. So, I ask you this. Who are the co-record holders for most consecutive seasons of 30 home runs?
Wow. Okay. Hank Aaron.
No.
Wait. Consecutive 30
consecutive
seasons?
30s. Hank Aaron he's the leader.
Did he have like a 29?
Hank Aaron has the record for most seasons with 20 home runs.
That I knew.
Yeah,
I
Hank
just
Aaron
assumed
is,
that he also popped the 30. I'll tell you this,
the co-leaders have 13, and then the collection that I have here stops at a large group with 8. So the next group now has Edwin Encarnacion in it. But one more season, and he's going to join this group. The answer, A-Rod and Barry Bonds each had 13 consecutive seasons of 30 or more homers.
Okay.
Next up, Albert Pujols and Jimmy Fox, who had 12 consecutive seasons of 30 or more homers. Then it's Sammy Sosa and Carlos Delgado with 10. Your group with 9, Lou Gehrig, Eddie Matthews, Mike Schmidt, Rafael Palmeiro, Jim Thome, and Manny Ramirez. Now, here is the group that Encarnacion could join should he get to 8. The group of 8, Mark Teixeira, Jeff Bagwell, Mike Piazza, Albert Bell, Mickey Mantle, and Babe Ruth.
It's a good list.
It's pretty good.
It's a good list.
That's a good list with one more.
I'm looking through Hank Aaron's season by season, and if not for 1964, where he hit 24 home runs, And then 1968, where he hit 29 home runs, he would have had 17 consecutive seasons of 30 homers.
But he didn't.
No, he didn't, but a model of consistency nonetheless. 29 and 24, come on, in 1964 and 68, that's essentially 30. 68, he had 29 home runs. That's like 55.
It's not. Look, you can if you want to use OPS Plus and try to deal with ERA and Park and all of that, you can. I'm just giving you what I know the numbers say. This is like the argument I had at the baseball game the other day.
What argument did you have? Oh, yeah, that's a nonsense argument. By the way, the Edwin Encarnacion, I'll let you know. The Edwin Encarnacion memory that I have, it's his last year in Cincinnati, and I'm pretty sure it's Rick Sutcliffe doing the game. And Encarnacion's got a pair of runners on, I think, and the Reds are trailing by two. I think it's 2007, his last full season there. And Sutcliffe is just this and that. I mean, he really went in on Encarnacion. He's not the guy. He can't do it here. He's not going to hit the homer. Look down the lineup, see who's up next. This guy didn't have it. He pops a home run. Mm-hmm. Reds win it. Sutcliffe is just like, oh, all right then. I'll move on.
Yeah, it's a great list of names for similarity scores to Edwin Encarnacion, the people who are most like him from 10 to 1. Rocky Colavito, Roy Seavers, Daryl Strawberry, Greg Vaughn, Prince Fielder, Jermaine Dye, Ryan Klesko, Jeremy Burnitz, Tim Salmon, and David Justice.
That list feels right.
Doesn't it?
That's a perfect size and comfortable shape. List. That is a very fitting list. It's also a big list.
Yeah, it is. So ahead of the
Fielder and Klesko and Burnitz.
Yeah, a lot of large human beings there.
And Strawberry's not, but the rest, Greg Vaughn, big men.
We have the Midday Midway coming up. I've got a salacious and gossipy story about a top golfer and his hot fiance having some problems, but that's not why you called. So I was almost that parent. You know, I was the whole sports parent thing. My rule is if somebody's got an issue, you never get involved. You know, there's sometimes the coaches fight with coaches and coaches fight with umpires and you just smile and nod and walk away but this is as close as I came to a moment of like, really? You're going to say, so I was the official scorer for our team. Both sides keep score usually, and I'm a pretty experienced baseball scorekeeper.
Done it a time or two.
Kind of my job for a long time.
All right.
As a baseball play-by-play guy, and then somebody who reported on the Cubs and Sox, and covered a World Series game. I'm pretty good at keeping a score sheet. I think I'm pretty good at understanding the rules of baseball because I've kind of been in this for a while, and so my son's team threw a combined no-hitter. It was 7 in a game, 5 pitchers. They won 13-1. It's a no-hitter. They're lining up to shake hands, and I walk over to the fence, says, hey, congrats, nice job, guys, and it's a no-hitter. Way to go. Right, no big deal, whatever. The opposing coach, who was coaching first base, this weird old guy I'd never seen before, because most of these coaches, you've seen, they've been around
the
park.
They came up with them. They've been around all this kind of stuff.
Because most of the guys I've seen have coached my kid at some point, or they've been a teammate to dad. I'd never seen this guy before. And he comes right up to me at the fence, and he goes, "We had hits!" And I was like, no. You had a run, but you didn't have any hits. He goes, "What about that one to left?" And I said, this one? Because I draw the vectors on the scorecard. Yes, I
just showed him the list.
And I said, if you're talking about this one, that resulted in the left fielder throwing to our second baseman to force out the runner who was at first. So the batter reached on a fielder's choice. He goes, well, what about the one to right? I said, if I'm talking about this one, he was thrown out at first by the right fielder.
Oh, no.
It was an out. Well, that happens a lot now as they move to 90-foot bases.
Oh, that makes sense.
Happens,
yeah.
The younger
kid cracks one pretty good. Yeah. 90 feet's
a long way. So I pointed it to him, and he just kind of goes, we had hits. And he walked away. And I'm either thinking, this word that you keep on using, I do not think it means what you think it means. But I just, I'm like, okay, deep breath, just leave it there. Don't get into an argument because there's something wrong with this
guy.
I like
that you showed the guy the book.
Maybe it's possible I missed one.
Does he not have a former broadcaster keeping his book?
Sometimes I drift on you, but generally when what we do is it's by courtesy, you walk over to the other team's scorekeeper.
What you have.
And usually the umpire will come over during in between innings and make sure there's no discrepancy.
Right.
How many runs did you score? Okay. And the ump would say, do we have two out, two and two count, whatever. Somebody else is charting pitches, the whole thing. But it was just so weird. We had hits. Like, in what world?
How do you keep the book? Pretty standard? Pretty usual?
it's the way I've always done
it. You don't do any of the weird stuff that Len, not weird, but Casper does, like, a very advanced way of keeping score and bases reached and stuff. Oh, no, I couldn't figure it out.
He's got his own little, like, language thing, he's beautiful mind thing.
Smarter than I am.
Going so, yeah. on. Yeah, he's got, it's all electronic. I don't do the little slash marks. I do the standard fill in the diamond. But I do like, when I was working, I had the four-color pen. Which would determine sometimes if a ball is hit very,
just
very hard.
Just because you see it easier.
Right. And that way,
react faster.
When you're doing your game recap and when the guy comes up again, you can say, you know, he hit a ball hard down the left field line last time. It just helps you visualize everything better if you have a color code.
It's one of the first things Ed did when I started over there. I'd kept, you know, we were doing a game and I kept score for an inning. He turns right around during the break. He looks at me, let me see your book. You go, what? Let me see your book. Let me see how you keep the book. I'm like, okay. Because Ed didn't know who I was. He didn't know anything about me. I'd been hired, and there it is.
He has so many thoughts.
Let me see your book. Let me see how you keep the book.
See if he validate you as a baseball person.
He says, so what's this? You got a strikeout here? Yeah, that's a strikeout. Oh, just a K, huh? Yeah, just a K. What if he's looking? You know, up backwards K.
Backwards K.
Yeah, he's just kind of running me through the pace. Like, how do you keep the book? I want to see your book. And you know, I passed. I handed it over. He's like, all right, it's fine. Okay, thanks, Ed.
So it met the Ed Farmer seal of book approval?
You know, he did tell me the one thing. He told me a good broadcaster tip. When you keep strikeouts, write a little number of how many strikeouts it is next to the K, which isn't something I'd done before. And it's like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Now you know exactly how many the guy's got. It's an easy ask.
Yeah, the midway is coming up. I've got a famous, successful golfer and the two hot babes in his life. When apparently there's only supposed to be one hot babe in your life, and I might have contact with extraterrestrials.
I have a story of murder and a problem that we all have. I might be addicted.
Is it murder?
No, it's murder. No, it might be an addiction, and I may need help. That's the midway next on Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.